Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast, the one that's out there that you may not have been listening to, but you're listening to now, and we're so glad you're here because we do things just a little bit differently, and I'm just one of the Jedi Masters here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as he is every single episode, because, well, I just wouldn't do the show without him, the one, the only, the master, John Mills.
Yes, I'm taking a break from imparting wisdom on Yoda. He frequently, his ghost comes to me, and he's always very oh, John, what should I do? And I'm like, okay, settle down. Let me tell you how to navigate the netherworld here.
It's a little awkward, though, when he wakes you up in the middle of the night. I don't think AJ Bunn
likes that. No, it is a little bit weird to have this glowing blue, yet green guy hanging off at the, you know, foot of the bed, but, who am I to judge?
Well, John, we're not here to talk about your weird, awkward, and meetings with Yoda. I actually was thinking about this a lot recently because, obviously, in Rebels and the Clone Wars, we've had Darth Maul back, and I thought, you know, we're in that kind of month of the year that I know you and your friends like to call, I think,
Shocktober.
That's right. So I'm not really into Shocktober, but I know you are, and I know we're both into Darth Maul as a character. And so I thought it would be fun to talk about Darth Maul and all the things that he's been through, what we like about him, all that stuff. But first, the question I wanted to ask you to get this kicked off, were you mad at episode one when he was killed?
I wasn't mad. I was surprised. And the reason I was surprised is I still remember sitting in the car, passenger seat of my friend Mike's car. He lived up in Baltimore at the time. And the latest issue of the Star Wars Insider had come out. And I pulled it out of my bag and I held it up for him. And it had the close-up of Darth Maul. And it said it was something like the new face of evil. And I remember holding it up and turning it to him and saying, oh my gosh, would you get a load of this? And I remember him getting mad at me and looking at me and saying, that's a spoiler. I was like, but it's on the cover of the magazine. He said, I didn't want to know that. I said, but magazine. And it was an awkward car ride from that point forward. But I thought that Maul was going to ride it out through all three movies, honestly. And the fact that he got killed at the end of the first one was disorienting. I wasn't mad about it, but it was disorienting. I didn't know why. It didn't seem necessary to kill him. What was your reaction? Were you upset?
You know, honestly, at the time, no. I was just like, oh my God, that was so awesome. You know, because we just never seen anything like that before in Star Wars. It was pretty much everything we thought the prequel type Jedi would be. You know, I mean, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan just being complete BAs, you know, with their lightsabers and fighting a Sith Lord for the first time and who knows how long, maybe over 1,000 years it's been. And the way Obi-Wan was able to defeat Darth Maul, which was great because it was a nice reason why he understands how to beat Anakin at the end of episode 3. He's like, I've done this move before, and I know exactly what's coming.
But in 1999, though, like the first viewing didn't catch you off guard at all?
No, man, I really was just so into the film at that point and everything. I wasn't thinking about that until maybe later and I think once we got to episode 2 and it was Dooku, I was thinking to myself, man, I wonder if this would have been even better if Darth Maul had lived. That's when I think I really started thinking about it.
Interesting, because I Maul dying caught me off guard. I knew that Qui-Gon was going to die. That was a given because
Well, I mean, he had a noble end, apparently, on the soundtrack.
No, but even before the even before the soundtrack came out, I knew he was going to die because they had that shot of Obi-Wan screaming no in the preview. And I remember seeing the preview and looking at, same friend, Mike, looking at him and saying, Liam Neeson died. And he says, what? I said, that's the only reason anybody yells no in Star Wars like that is because somebody died. And he goes, no, that can't be the case. I was like, no, no, no. He's going to. So when Qui-Gon died, I was like, oh, geez. Like, it still had, like, an impact. But I was, you know, I was like, okay, well, you know, I expected that. And, yes, the soundtrack, of course, Qui-Gon's noble end sealed the deal. But when Maul got cut in half, you know, and it was story over, if I recall, because a lot of people challenged Lucas on that. A lot of people said, why on earth did you do this? And he said, well, he's dead, and that's what it is, and it'll make sense later, and, you know, don't worry about it. So, I mean, I always just took it that he was done. That, it, you know, I actually used to make the argument that in terms of the film, The Phantom Menace, that Darth Maul, in a sense, not, this is not a literal statement, but in a sense, metaphorically existed for one transition, and it's when Qui-Gon does the midichlorian test on Anakin, and you know, Obi-Wan says, what does this mean? And Qui-Gon says, I'm not sure. And then it transitions to Maul showing up with, you know, the dark side music and showing up there. And that transition in Phantom Menace is right. but it's a very clear indication. What does this mean? And you see basically what Anakin's going to become, in a sense, immediately after that. Like, it's very, I thought it was very clear from the visual language that that's what.
And he had a really cool starship.
The Sith Infiltrator was pretty awesome.
It was. I really want that Lego set.
And it's a darn shame that we never saw it in a later film.
I know.
Like,
I know. I always expected maybe Palpatine to cruise around in that, like, when he needed to.
Well, I mean, who's to say he didn't? But I suppose you could also make the presumption that it was there on Naboo. So once he died, you know, the Jedi Council showed up and said, oh, you know, hey, cool, look at this ship.
That or somebody scavenged it before they even
got
there.
The Naboo don't really seem like scavengers, though. Maybe Gungans would have done it?
Yeah, I don't know, maybe.
You know, that would be a cool story. Maybe they'd never do it. I mean, Clone Wars is done now.
How the Sith got their ship back?
Maybe he would have parked it in the swamps in Naboo, like, hidden. And have, you know, somebody go out and get it. Maybe even like a first test for Dooku. Could he do it without being found?
Oh, that's a good question. I like that. I like that a lot. Well, and that leads me to the question. Okay, so we all thought that Darth Maul was dead. And deader than a dead thing that's dead because he got cut
in
half.
He was deader than Marley in A Christmas Carol.
I mean, exactly. I mean, he was deader than Marley the dog when that died.
Hey, too soon.
I mean, you know, the Lincoln assassination only recently became funny.
No, that's
so
true. That's true.
Yeah, great Office reference right there. For anybody who doesn't know that one. So, what were your thoughts when they decided to bring Darth Maul back in the Clone Wars?
Surprise bordering on elation, because I thought, hey, this is great because the thing is, when they quote unquote brought him back was Mother Talzin's reference that he was still alive and seeing like a broken image. And I remember honestly thinking at the time, is that can't be Maul. That's no, they're messing with me right now. Like I didn't think that was really Savage, you know. I was like, that it can't be Maul. There's got, like, he's gonna go encounter Maul as a spirit or something, you know. And so when you finally encountered him and he was still alive, it was, again, just like his death, it was disorienting, but it was disorienting in a positive way where I felt, okay, well, they're gonna give him some sort of resolution arc now. Like, it's gonna be fun to, like, I figured they were gonna bring him back to give him a proper fan service send off. I thought, you know, he's going to get one arc and he'd get killed again, and that was going to be the end of it.
I'd say I loved it. I mean, I was on board, and I think part of it had to do with it. By that point, the Clone Wars had earned my trust. Dave had earned my trust as the supervising director of the Clone Wars, and George and the ideas that he was giving forth for the Clone Wars were really working for me. I just thought it was firing on all cylinders as a show. It was really incredibly impactful into the Star Wars universe and what they were doing and what they were able to do and what they were, you know, just stuff that you'd never imagined would have happened was happening on the show. And this was one of those things you just never imagined would happen. Darth Maul is going to come back. And what I really loved about him coming back was this, the way that he does. I know there are people out there, they hate him coming back with the, you know, fragmented mind and the spider legs and all that. But I don't know if you've ever listened to Sam Witwer talk about the character of Darth Maul and his coming back and why he's able to survive. He's been on Rebel Force Radio quite a bunch, and he's talked about that. And Sam is just an incredible Star Wars fan. And he understands Star Wars in a way that, you know, very few people, I think, really do. He just gets it. And listening to him talk about the reason that Maul can come back is that he's so consumed with hatred the moment that he dies that the dark side of the Force just kind of envelops him. And all of this stuff just kind of gathers around him and helps him live. And the idea that the dark side of the Force is helping him live just kind of creeps you out. I mean, and it turns him into this evil, creepy spider thing. And that just, to me, I just kind of loved it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing is, there is, in a sense, and, you know, I go back and forth because I love the arcs that they've done with Maul. They've always been great fun. And when he teamed up with Savage, that was great fun. And when he went back to try to depose Palpatine, that was great fun. I've always enjoyed his plot lines. I've never regretted the fact that they brought him back in that sense. But at the same time, I have from time to time had an issue with them bringing him back because he seems to have become, in a sense, a crutch for the storylines. Where it's, we need somebody quick that we don't want to spend a lot of time building up or having a background. Let's throw Maul in. And that way, the audience will immediately know. Like, and they don't have to exert as much effort creating a new character. Like, I really enjoyed what they did with Savage originally, where it was reminiscent of Maul, but he was different. And now, I mean, Maul has become so powerful. And so, and granted, at the end of the Clone Wars, spoilers for anybody who has not finished watching the Clone Wars series.
I mean, okay? He does get the smackdown big time.
Palpatine kills Savage, but says to Maul, basically, I still have something for you to do. Or not those exact words, but he basically says, I'm going to let you live.
He uses for him, he says.
Right. If Maul is this powerful, pre-Vader, even post-Vader, why is Palpatine not considering him? Like, I would think it would be natural, because one of the things that I do like about the Dark Horse series is they had that Star Wars Tales where people just did crazy stories, and they had Maul versus Vader, and it was a really great story. Why would Palpatine not throw? Because, you know, Lucas's whole thing has always been, this is Lucas's own words, that Vader and Palpatine are like a dysfunctional marriage. They're both staying with the other because they've never found anybody better, but they're always looking for somebody to leave the other one for. Maul seems to fit that bill pretty severely if he has made it this far without getting killed again.
And I think the answer to the question is the way that they take the story, that once Maul comes back, he doesn't really want anything to do with Palpatine. His goal is to destroy Palpatine and to find a way to make himself big enough so that he can take him out.
Which is the role of any Sith apprentice.
Which is the only, but what's interesting is that is as we move forward is that Maul doesn't even want to be in a Sith anymore at this point. He just is a dark side user. And I think that's the most interesting thing. And the reason I think that they've kept, they brought Maul back and is honestly is the connection that we get with Episode 7 and where we're going in the sequel films, where it's not really so much about Jedi versus Sith anymore. It's about light versus dark. And the label of Sith and Jedi don't seem to matter as much as the fact that we've just got dark versus light.
Yes.
And Maul is the beginning of that. And we're seeing that. We saw that with Ahsoka in Rebels. And Maul is the dark versus the light without having just a severe dogmatic label to it.
Okay. But again, getting back to if Maul had laid low, if Maul had not interacted with anybody, if Maul had not activated a holocron, if Maul had not taken over Mandalore, if Maul had not made a move against Palpatine in specific, fine. Okay, Palpatine says, well, he can't take me out. He can try again in the future. Wouldn't Vader have gone and sought him out for his help? Because Vader's whole play is to try to overthrow the Emperor, right? That's what the Sith apprentice is supposed to do. Why wouldn't Vader go and either destroy Maul at his master's bidding or enlist Maul's help and say, you are extremely powerful. I am extremely powerful. We can take him out. Let's team up and then we'll work out the details after we've killed him as to who's going to rule everything. Like it would make sense to me. For me, it's built up to the point, I guess I'm saying that it would make more sense, the most sense, if Maul's end, like this all works for me, if Maul's end eventually is at Vader's hand. Now, I think that the way that they're building is it's going to be at Obi-Wan's hand because everything that they're building with, especially with the Rebels episode that aired most recently as we're recording this, is with...
He lives!
Right, with Star Wars Visionaries back in 2005, a bunch of artists got a chance to make their own stories, and that was the first time we saw postulated, you know, that Maul didn't care about Sith and Jedi anymore. He was just out to kill Obi-Wan, and it seems to be building to that.
Well, and I think, though, to kind of go with where you are, and the reason that hasn't happened is this, is that, so, obviously the Clone Wars got cut short, and there was another arc that they were going to do with Maul. And it was the answer to the question of, okay, what does Palpatine have for him to do? And the goal was they were going to use Maul to be able to take out Mother Talzin because Palpatine sees her as a threat and using Maul to lure her out. And they actually do that in a Dark Horse comic called Son of Dathomir. 4-part issue, very good.
Yeah.
And that's how that's the use that they have for Maul is to bring her out of hiding so that they can kill her. And that leaves Maul with absolutely nothing. And he ends up going to Malachor at that point, escaping to Malachor and gets stuck there. No, I mean, he's lost for, you know.
Yeah,
15
okay.
Years. I mean, nobody knows he's even alive at that point. So I think
yeah.
he kind of gets lost. It reminds me of The Lord of the Rings, where things that should not have been forgotten were lost. And
okay.
Maul just kind of gets forgotten again until we pick him back up in Rebels.
Well, I mean, in a sense, he's had his Gollum moment when he's got spider body and everything. But like,
yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, like, it just seems... Having Maul brought into it, especially the fact that, you know, that they keep going and that they're sort of trying to use Rebels as a way to, you know, repurpose his unrealized Clone Wars arc. It it seems to me that it is, it's keeping him around for too long. Like, I would almost prefer for Maul to not be as involved. Like, it seems to, I don't know, it just seems to shrink things a little bit because there are just too many questions at this point. I didn't have these questions during the Clone Wars because if the last time I see him is Palpatine electrocuting him and saying, I'm not going to kill you, I'm just going to hurt you a lot, right? That, for me, I can play with that. I can say, well, you know, he died before, you know, Vader was really ascendant before, or Vader wiped him out or something like that. To have him this close to the original trilogy, it feels too close. It feels too tight. I would prefer to leave him back in that era instead of having him in the quote unquote current era.
Right. Now, I mean, and I think that the big question becomes, does Maul have anything to do with the sequel trilogy? Is somehow Maul Snoke at this point or something? I mean, there's a lot of theories out there about that kind of question.
Yeah.
And part of that, I think there's some real validity to it because, you know, if Maul makes it past Obi-Wan and all of that stuff that they seem to be leading up to in this season, who knows? I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But does he have anything to do with that? And will that make his legacy important, you know, in the sense that it wasn't just about bringing him back to have him play with these characters a little bit and then we kill him again, but that Maul's legacy goes beyond even Palpatine and Vader into something else, which I think would actually be really fascinating and really legitimize the fact that we started this journey in the Clone Wars and we're moving forward all the way to the sequel trilogy. And I think that, to me, that would be actually pretty exciting to know that not small universe syndrome, but just that, who knows? What if he finds the person who kind of, what if Ezra is Snoke and we just never knew, you know?
Well, Ezra could be, for all I know. I don't think that Maul or Ezra will wind up being Snoke. And for one very specific reason, for fans of the series who don't pay as much attention to the details that you and I do, for people who aren't fans of the Clone Wars or the expanded universe, it's way too hard at this point to bring Maul in to the movies. I stand by. I'm going to be disproven, probably, possibly, maybe not, when Rogue One comes out, but I still believe in my heart of hearts that Snoke is Orson Krennic, but we don't know. But I don't see Maul coming. I don't see them as able to bring him back into the series unless, I think the only in that they really have is if they do have a dedicated Obi-Wan movie. Bringing Maul back for that one, I think, would work even for the casual fan. Because to have him come back, you can still address it with dialogue saying you came back such and such and just make reference to it and have it be, you know, the big last showdown, I think would work even for the casual fan. I just don't see. And I mean, I suppose that's part of what I'm reacting to is that Maul has done so much, it, you know, in the margins that it's just he's done so, I mean, like, it's the ruling Mandalore thing that I remain stuck on. Like, it's just like, he took over a whole planet, you know? Like, it's just, it's big. It's real big what he's accomplished post-death.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that I think is so cool about him is the way that he was able to put himself in that position. And what I love about that is that it is the way that it actually changed the character and our perception of Maul is he wasn't just the brute force, but Maul, like all Sith apprentices, has been trained to do all of these different things, to be good at politics, to be good at deceit and undermining and handling of money and ruling of people. I mean, he's been trained for all of this, and he was cut down before he ever got to be a part of it, you know. And that's one of the things I remember when he first wakes up. He's like, ah, the Clone Wars, they started without me. You know, this sad reminiscence of all that he's missed, what he was meant for, and now that he's back, he's in it for himself, you know? Like, he's not there to serve the Sith anymore. He's there to serve himself and to make sure that he's basically, in some ways, I think, remembered, which is kind of what all Sith want, which is to just be on top.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I always come back to, you know, just, it doesn't, I mean, if I were Palpatine, I put myself in the shoes of, if I were Palpatine, I'd be like, well, Vader, you know, he's half a body that's been burned crispy. Hey, Maul, you handled it better than he did. Come on back over.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, you know, to speak to your point, they've made a lot of effort throughout all of the, you know, the expanded universe stuff. The very first book that came out with Maul, Darth Maul Shadow Hunter, that was set pre-episode one, obviously, tried to show him as more of the working in the shadows guy.
Right.
Who, you know, like Palpatine was the face of the Sith and Maul was, you know, the one working in the shadows to make everything work. You know, up to and including Luceno's book, where, you know, he comes into a very crowded plot to help Palpatine out with everything. But, you know, I struggle with Maul at this point. I can't help but struggle with him. But I will say that Witwer's vocal talents are amazing, because one of the things that was so distinctive about Maul in Phantom Menace was his voice. Peter, and I always butcher his last name, Serafinowicz, who was in Shaun of the Dead and Guardians of the Galaxy, did his voice. And for Witwer has sort of done what James Arnold Taylor has done with Obi-Wan, where he's made Maul his.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And it's so interesting, because if they were to theoretically do a movie where it was Ewan McGregor back, what would they do with Maul at this point? Because Witwer has owned that voice. We'll all still plug into McGregor, even though James Arnold Taylor has been around. What would they do with Maul in the movie? Do you think they bring Ray Park back?
I mean, they could bring Ray Park back for the, you know, the character work. I think they make Sam Witwer the voice. I think there's no reason to change it at this point.
So you think that if they bring Maul back for an Obi-Wan standalone movie, they don't bring back Serafinowicz, they bring back, they have Witwer dub it over.
You should. I think Witwer's kind of earned it at this point. I think, you know, there were so few lines for Darth Maul anyway that you need somebody with the range that I think Witwer has had with the character. And I think that's where they should go. I really do.
I don't know. I'd also be interested to see if they could cast Witwer. I don't know the height difference between Witwer and Maul, or if they could explain it with like robot legs or something like that. Because
They could get him
because
to play
Witwer
Maul.
Is
that
an
would be
actor.
Interesting. Yeah. So, oh, he's, you know, a fantastic. Yeah, he's a great actor. So it would just be interesting because, you know, one of the biggest parts about Maul is the martial arts aspect. And so you would want to be able to have that aspect not be downplayed in any way.
Listen, if they can make Keanu Reeves seem like a kung fu master in the Matrix,
that
movies.
Is true. I mean, he did know kung fu, and it worked out decently.
Wires and CG can do wondrous things.
It's amazing. So you're right. And you do have to, we have to remember that Darth Maul is a different character than he was in the prequels in the first place. I mean, the character has, you know, droid legs now basically, and just like he's just not the same.
Okay, let me throw that question out there then, because you made reference to it. That the first time you really questioned whether, you know, the decision to kill Maul was in episode two. Do you think the prequels are better? Two-pronged question. Do you think the prequels wind up being better overall? And or do you think they wind up being better received if Maul makes it all the way to being the one that Anakin kills at the beginning of episode 3?
I don't know. I think that's an interesting question. And I think I enjoy what we get with... I think I enjoy the character of Dooku and what he adds to the series. Because he's just a completely different type of character. He's a different type of used-to-be Jedi, but he's turned Sith. You know, he has this strange regalness to him that we aren't used to with anyone who's been known as a Jedi. He has a whole different air about him, and I enjoy that presence that he brings to the screen and the type of character to which he is. And then, of course, I love what they do with him in the Clone Wars series as well. I think that really adds to the Dooku character. And then, you know, Grievous is just... is so much fun. But yeah. I think you're right. It would have been a very different series if you had Darth Maul be the protagonist villain throughout episode 2 and maybe into 3, or at least just episode 2, you know, and maybe that was the point in which he
Do you think that his character design, the, you know, the red and black tattoos and everything, would have boxed him in? Because Dooku, to speak to your point about the regalness, I wouldn't buy. I mean, the stories wind up going very, very differently if Maul survives episode 1. Because I don't buy Maul leading this insurgency, establishing the separatists. I don't buy it. Right? And it is, rightly or wrongly, it's because of the face tattoos. Dooku, I can believe, is the leader of a separatist movement because, like you said, he's regal. He has a composition about him. He has that commanding voice and that presence, but a refinement. You know, he's an old gentleman. Whereas Maul, I could see him starting something, but I couldn't see him being the face of the separatists. Because at the time that the Clone Wars start, even by inference in the film, they've been sort of causing problems in the Senate to begin with. And if Maul is standing there, you know, several systems are going to leave with me. Like, everybody in the Senate's going to look at him and be like, this guy's a bad guy, right? We all get that? Like, we're not going to doubt it. Whereas Dooku, I could buy spinning, you know, sitting in the Senate and saying, oh, we're all going to leave if you don't do these. You know, I could see him more as a negotiator.
I think, so you make a great point, and I think it's a really interesting conversation. The great thing about Maul throughout the Clone Wars is seeing him interact with all of these characters. And doing something like taking over Mandalore and ruling Mandalore. And what was great about that is that Maul is the guy behind the scenes. He puts Almec in charge, but he's the puppet master. And so that's what I see Maul doing with if he's setting up things with the Separatists. He is the puppet master. He has a front, a face. And if Maul has to show up, it's kind of like when Vader has to show up. You know, Tarkin goes in and, like, does things in the Empire. But if Vader shows up, you know, S is going down.
Yeah,
you know
I mean, the thing is, I'm hoping to see something. I don't know. I mean, it just seems that Maul had so much initiative. And what's so weird is that he has to exist in these plot lines that don't impact the you know, the big screen releases adversely. We know it all has to wrap up before it gets to that point. And I don't know, it's so weird to exist in this space where you know that this character is never going to be allowed to impact episode 8 or Rogue One. I mean, maybe he impacts Rogue One. Maybe he does. Who knows?
Right.
But I don't think he impacts Rogue One. I know he's not going to impact episode 8 or episode 9.
Right. I mean, I think that's the thing where, you know, we get so wrapped up in things like, this character's still around. They have to be involved. But, you know, we kind of forget how big the universe of Star Wars is and that kind of traps us into the small universe. So, you know, a character doesn't have, like, if for some reason that Darth Maul did survive past the Rebels series, him being not in, you know, Rogue One or any of those kind of things, I don't think that really makes a difference. What I think is going to be most interesting is just to see, honestly, are they going to do the Visionaries comic? You know, right. I think that's the interesting question, because I think that's where it's leading. But are mm-hmm. they going to do that on Rebels or and cheat us out of a Kenobi movie?
Here's my big thing. Okay, I want to ask you this question just to wrap things up. I want to ask you this question because I have a thought. Obviously, I'll go with my thought first. But the question that I've been, you know, in my brain, somebody comes to me and says he has to die in Rebels. It has to end in Rebels. How do you end it? I bring Kenobi back in.
Oh, yeah.
But I bring Kenobi back in the way that Maul is going to go get him. But Ezra, because he took part in the vision, they stop Maul from getting to Kenobi, or they help in some way. You know, somehow it comes together that the actions of this crew, the Ghost crew, is what makes what happens between Maul and Kenobi to resolve that plot line finally. They do something that keeps it off the radar of the Empire. Because they know
right.
that if Maul and Kenobi create a big enough conflagration, the Emperor and Vader and whoever else, they're going to sense it. They're going to know. So they do something that takes the attention away from it. That's how I resolve everything if somebody comes to me and says that. Somebody comes to you and they say, you got to wrap Maul up, and it's got to be in the context of Rebels. What do you do?
If it has to be in the Rebels series, you don't cheat everybody out of Kenobi and Maul. You could do something really cool in the sense that make Maul find out that Obi-Wan is watching over this kid, and that Obi-Wan finds this kid important, and that just like he did with Satine, where he mortally wounds, you know, the soul of Obi-Wan Kenobi, he thinks, this is my last opportunity to do that to Kenobi. Again, I can do it again. But like you said, have it be that the Rebels crew and not really the crew, but Ezra and Kanan are responsible for helping take Maul down, because they've had interactions with Maul, so that Obi-Wan fights alongside Kanan and Ezra to take down Maul. And obviously, I think the killing blow, it does need to be Kenobi. I think it's just poetic justice at that point. But I also think that what it does is that it really amps up how important Kanan and Ezra were to the story of the saga. It also shows just how much Obi-Wan has done to, I mean, it wasn't just him sitting in the desert for 20 years twiddling his thumbs. You know, he's actively watching over Luke, making sure he's safe. And I mean, this S is going to go down when Luke is 2 years from A New Hope. So it's very important that Luke survive. Obviously, we know he's going to, but I mean, just, I think the thing that we really wanted to see, how these Rebels characters are integral to the storyline of the entire saga, that is a storyline that really helps. So if we have to do this in Rebels, I think that's the best way to do it. So, and I think that makes for an incredible, like, season finale, 3-4-parter. Something like that, you know, just make this, if you have to do it in Rebels, it needs to be huge. It needs to be at least like a 2-hour thing where you've got 4 episodes that all combine together to create this one massive storyline. So
do you think that we get it, whether it's my version, your version, in between, whatever, do you think that they're going to give us a resolution for Maul?
I think that the resolution is either in Rebels or it's in some sort of film work. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, obviously, if it's a film, yeah. But I definitely think we'd get the resolution.
So we're in the end game portion. Now that he knows that Obi-Wan is alive, this is, I think we're both of a wavelength. I mean, they might put it in a book for all we know. But I think that we're in agreement at the very least that we're in the end game now for Maul. This is it. We're going to find out how it ends for him. I mean, I think we have to. Yeah?
Oh, I mean, I think you're right. Unless somehow, like we said, the one of the theories, like with Snoke or something, it turns out to be the case. This is the end game for, and I think in some ways, a lot of us thought that him coming back, yeah, we wanted to see that showdown.
We've got that showdown a number of times with Obi-Wan.
the showdown with Obi-Wan and Maul, bringing that home, I think is we great. And what's kind of cool, just think about this: if that happens, Obi-Wan is old.
Mm-hmm.
He's like 2 years from A New Hope. This isn't spry Obi-Wan anymore. This is more this is more Alec Guinness Obi-Wan. So I think that makes for a really interesting
fight, which would put him timeline-wise, if his age has remained the same, even though the expanded universe got thrown out, that would put Obi-Wan at about 57 or 58 years old. Somewhere along in the timeline, because if I recall correctly, he was about 59 when the events of A New Hope happen. If I recall correctly,
yeah. I mean, he looks like he's like 82.
Oh, that's not true.
Yeah, he's only
Alec Guinness turned 60 totally on the set, so
I am totally
people
teasing,
just expect too much. So. I mean, he's living in the desert for Pete's sake.
I always thought that he would look like that.
I think
you live in that Tatooine desert for 20 years.
Well, I think that one of the big problems was that in A New Hope, Vader calls him old man. So I think that sort of like implants itself in your brain as a kid, where a guy with white hair and somebody says old man, you're like, oh, must be like 80, right? I think Qui-Gon's supposed to be about the same age when he buys it that Obi-Wan is. I believe so. He's supposed to be in his 60s or something like that.
Yeah, that's probably
true. Which was actually
an issue
I always had with the makeup, because I always thought that Liam Neeson looked too young for his age in that film.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good
but
thought.
Maul,
I never actually really thought about that.
Maul has really, so. I think with the tattoos, that was really the cleverest way to hide his age.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I think, just to kind of wrap this up, one of the smart things that they have done with the Rebels series is that the character has changed. Like, the character is not just the same character. I think that's what makes it so special, is that they have really done a great job of showing the character through time.
Yeah.
And making him feel different in each time period. So it's not just like, oh, we're just the same. You know, I think that's wonderful. And it's a really smart, it just shows that they're thinking. And I think that's wonderful.
Sure. It allays one of my sort of pseudo criticisms of, you know, could this have been better served with a new and original character? At the very least, they have shown Maul to have changed through time. And so I think that has always served a great way to, tamping down any criticism I might have, is that Maul in Rebels is different from Maul in Clone Wars, is different from Maul in The Phantom Menace. And so
I
think that's what makes it work.
Exactly.
Overall, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that's super special about it. And I really do like it. In the end, I'm just very glad that they brought the character back, because I think I think that something that George realized is that the more he thought about the character, the more he wanted an opportunity to use him. And the character's special, you know. It's a great character, and I think he's turned out to be an even better character than any of us thought that he was. And I think they've done a good job of legitimizing the fact that they did bring him back. And I really enjoy that. And yeah. And I'm glad we've gotten to spend more time with him. What I've got to say is that it was George at his best of just taking a huge risk, you know, because it could have sucked.
Yeah, I definitely think that you're right to call out there's an undercurrent of regret by bringing him back. There's sort of an acknowledgement of, yeah, you know, I'm sorry that I felt I had to kill him in that plot line. I'm
right.
Totally down with that. And I do agree with you that it could have gone so much worse than it did. It could have been disastrous to bring him back. We could have all just been sitting there and saying, oh, this is just bleh. And instead,
right, exactly,
the Clone Wars arcs were pretty great. I am still anxious. It's got to pay off with this Rebels arc, you know, like that.
Yeah.
That I got it. I'm going to try to sit back and just be like, okay, I got faith in this, but like I just it's that Rebels arc. Like I have a little bit of trepidation. I want to see them make this, bringing them back in this time period, pay off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree, and I think you're right. You know, that's the thing. If you're going to bring this character back, the character has to work. You have to have made it worth it. And are you going to make it worth it? And I think that's the big question that everybody has when it comes to, okay, what's the end game for Maul? And I think, you know, when I think about what they did with Ahsoka, and you think about what they did with any of the other characters throughout the Clone Wars and all that were part of that series, they have a huge respect for what they've created and do their best to really, I think, give us what we deserve as fans. You know, if we stuck with it,
okay,
if we've been there, they're giving us great stories. And so I think... yeah, I think
so it's going to be so they're great, the dark knight of storytellers. They're not what we want. They're what we deserve. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, in a way, I think they're giving us more than we thought that we even knew we wanted. I think that's the thing that makes this stuff special. Is that they're doing more than we ever thought possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, I still reserve judgment on the on bringing them back for Rebels. We'll see how that works. We'll see if it pays off. But do you know what does pay off, Matt? Do you know what really pays off?
Loot Crate. Loot Crate pays off, John.
Because if you go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, enter the code nerdparty, you get a discount on a terrific subscription service that sends you a box of goodies every single month. And the Shocktober focus is all of the horror things that you love. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween. Go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty. Enter the code nerdparty. You will not regret it. And you know what else they won't regret, Matt? They won't regret reaching out to us online. Where can they find us online?
Well, John, they can find us on Twitter at the Jedi Masters. They can also find us as the Nerd Party at Join Nerd Party. You can also send us an email, and this is a special call out to everybody, John. We would love to have more listener interaction, and we'd really actually love to have a show where we just answer mail of questions you have, things you thought we missed in an episode, things you'd love to hear us talk about. So send us all that. Go to an@thenerdparty.com, and we plan on making this a thing that we do every once in a while, just answering your questions and interacting with you guys, things you want to hear us talk about. So again, that's an@thenerdparty.com. And of course, you know, you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. And while they're over in iTunes, finding us on iTunes and subscribing to the show, they can really help us out with that star rating and review, which really helps us grow. We had our review contest. Thank you so much for everybody who did go and review us on iTunes, but we would still love to have more. It really does help out the show. Now, John, heck, you're all over the place online. So where can people find you if they would like to talk to you about all the fun things we talk about here?
Well, you can find me, I'm Kessel Junkie, on your social network of choice. You can go to my blog at KesselJunkie.com, where I stir the pot and ask controversial questions about Star Wars on a pretty regular basis. And tie into the show on occasion as well. So, you know, can always be fun to do that. You can find me over on Stage 9, which is a podcast on the Trek FM network about the Star Trek creators when they're not creating Star Trek. And you can find me with a special brand of hilarious insanity over on Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. Matt, where else can they find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing The Orb on the Trek FM network with Chris Jones talking about Deep Space Nine. I'm also doing Literary Treks with Bruce and Dan. And we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek, as well as get a chance to interview the authors. And, of course, I'm on the General Geek Show there, which is a fun place to be. We talk about all things geeky that don't have anything to do with Star Trek. We talk a lot of Star Wars, so check that out as well. In fact, there's a whole special Star Wars feed there you can find on iTunes. Star Wars, a 602 Club collection. Go find the 602 Club. You're going to love it. I just know it. And, of course, you can find me. I do a bit of writing sometimes on my own personal blog, and that's 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. John, man, I think there's only one thing left to say at this point. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.